cut.
That's not what was written.
Well, then you can do it yourself, jackass.
Mr. President.
I'll fight you.
Please, Mr. President.
Are we going to throw down right now?
We're not going to throw down, please. We're just trying to shoot this ad.
So stick with Bushy. And don't vote. And don't listen to liberals or Democrats or other Republicans that make fun of me or read the news or watch the news except for Fox. Thank you, and God bless.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 great. FM. Great. Amen. FM-alooyah.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
Mr. Speaker, members of Congress, Mom and Dad, last month a girl in Lincoln, Rhode Island sent me a letter. It began, "Dear George W. Bush, if there's anything you know, please send me a letter. P.S. Kiss my ass. Dick is a killer." It began the end of June in the Casablanca. Vice President Cheney, he showed the way. Terrified and innocent, the desire growing stronger, submitting to the whim of one brutal man. I feel free, I feel free, I feel free, I feel free. Dick is a killer. I feel free. Last August the 11th, on the deck of a carrier in the Pacific, I gave to you my complete commitment, and it is right. I love you, and I do not want to lose you. My purposes are just and true. Activity is increasing, and Dick is on the rise. By executive order, we're on the manhunt aboard the Starship Enterprise. The once all-powerful ruler of Iraq was found in a hole. President Clinton fucked it. True. President Clinton fucked it. Then farmers felt the sorrow. Yes, farmers felt the sorrow. I feel free. Farmers felt the sorrow, and one reason is clear. Dick is a killer. 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 Dick. Fuck yourself. Kiss my ass, and I want you. It's difficult to talk about. And I want you, because you set me free. And I want you. And I want you, and I want you, just as surely as Dick is a killer. 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 Dick. Dick, suck my dick, fuck my ass. Dick is a killer. 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 Fuck yourself. Kiss my ass. I believe that God made me a woman. I feel it in my heart, and this bitch's voice must be heard. A sex change is the only certain way to preserve the sanctity of marriage. We are living in historic times. We are living in a time of great change. Our leadership and resolve can light the way for others. And having come this far, and in the unfolding of the years, this country has a new friend called Shirley W. Bush. Dick is a killer. 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 May God continue to bless America. Word. I feel free. I feel free. I feel free. I feel free. Dick is a killer. I feel free. Fucked it. Fucked it. Fucked it. Fucked it.
And coming up next on 101.1 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's the evening show, Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We're on the 2nd of September, 2004. Stay with us.
for the man. Comb the city, every street, every grate. Set a guard at every gate, drag him out. Shut the moment that you find him down. Knock in the doors, lock up the city. Track him down, search the town. And be quick about it now. How the devil do I ever prevail when I'm only a man? But I'll never be duped by this scurrilous phantom again. I wasn't born to walk on water. I wasn't born to sack and slaughter. But on my soul I wasn't born to stoop to scorn and knuckle under. A man can learn to steal some thunder. A man can learn to work some wonder. But when the gauntlet's down, it's time to rise and climb the sky. And soon the moon will smolder and the winds will drive. Yes, a man grows older, but his soul remains alive. All those tremulous stars still glitter, and I will survive. Let my heart grow colder and as bitter as a falcon in the dark. There was a dream, a dying ember. There was a dream I don't remember. But I will resurrect that dream. The river stream and hills grow steeper. Oh, here in hell where life gets cheaper. Oh, here in hell the blood runs deeper. And when the final duel is near, I'll lift my spear and fly piercing into the sky and higher. And the strong will thrive. Yes, the weak will cower, while the fittest will survive if we wait for the dark.
And welcome to Bathroom Spears Broadsides. We have the V-Man from New York City. Hey, V-Man.
How you doing, Robert?
Good. You're a bit distorted, but what's going on?
Well, I'm on a cell phone. I'm at the corner of 29th Street and 8th Avenue in Midtown Manhattan, just a few blocks from Madison Square Garden.
Gotcha.
There's, I don't know how many tens of thousands of people there are in the streets right now. Hard to sit on. There's an international answer rally happening just a few blocks from Madison Square Garden. And across town at Union Square is a candlelight vigil sponsored by United for Peace and Justice. The situation here on 8th Avenue, where I'm at, is basically the beginning of the rally is at the 30th. The police have us penned in. The intersection's blocked off, and they're not letting the crowd connect. And so it's kind of a tense situation right now. The tension seems to be building. People are getting restless. I'm just checking in to let you know what's going on. And I just wanted to give a quick report. I'm going to get off the phone real quick, and I'll call you back if any developments happen.
Okay, do you want me to ask you a few questions, or how are you doing? Kind of hard to hear you, V-Man.
Yeah, go ahead. Ask me a few questions.
Okay. My question, first of all, is how long have you been in New York City?
I got here on Saturday.
And were you swept up in any of the sweeps? We hear 1,800 people have been imprisoned in the Guantanamo on the Hudson.
Yeah, that's true. I was not. I managed to avoid arrest. I witnessed a few of the violent confrontations, the violent provocations, rather, of the police, particularly on Monday night when the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign held a march, an unpermitted march, from United Nations Plaza to Madison Square Garden, just around the same intersection on 7th Avenue at 29th Street. The police sent in a squad of plainclothes officers on mopeds and caused a disturbance. I'm sure you've heard about the one officer who was supposedly hospitalized.
Yeah, I did hear about that. You're doing good. Are your press credentials saving you? Are you, what's happening? Is that the assistance?
One more time, please.
You have a large press on your hat. Is there a way to avoid? Are the police respecting press credentials?
They're only respecting press credentials that are issued by the state. I am an media reporter. I'm also reporting for Free Speech Radio News this week, and I have no official press credentials other than the indie media press badges that were handed out to IMC journalists. So I at first the cops were respecting those, but after Monday they communication with my back, so I have to be a little bit extra careful while I'm here.
How are New Yorkers generally responding? Do you have people kind of hanging out the windows applauding? Are they throwing eggs and tomatoes? What's going on?
I think overall this city hates George Bush. This is a primarily, Democratic city. For the most part, most of the people here, for the most part, from the people I've encountered, the regular New Yorkers who are not participating in the protests, seem to be in support of the demonstrations out in the street. Many New Yorkers are among the rally, the protesters out here tonight, and have been all week. Where I'm at now, people hanging out of windows watching. We the people say no to the Bush agenda from many windows in the area. No more signs down by the World Trade Center. So it's the number of numbers that are banner hangings on large buildings. So I think that overall the citizens of New York are in support of demonstrations. They want to see George Bush removed from office. And that's my perspective on it.
Sounds good to me, V-Man. You're a little hard to hear, but I think we can make out what you're saying. What's next? Are there any more direct action protests planned that you know about for tomorrow, or is everybody going to pack up and go home and watch them bomb the hell out of Fallujah?
Well, we'll see what happens. George Bush is, I believe, scheduled to take the podium at the Republican National Convention any moment, and the crowd here is going to stay until George Bush finishes his speech, so that the media has coverage of the protests while he's in the Madison Square Garden getting the nomination of the Republican Party.
Well, I take it you're not really directly supporting George Bush yourself, right, B-Man?
Absolutely not.
Anything you want to tell us that, you know, that's happened in the last few days that you think we should know about before we fade out here?
Well, hold on a second, Robert. There's something happening in the front of the room.
Okay. We're talking to the B-Man in New York City. Free radio, 101.1 FM, live from New York City.
There's a huge crowd here. As I said at the beginning, the intersection of 29th Street, they have this metal barricade keeping people apart, keeping the demonstrators separated from each other. It's a divide and conquer tactic that the New York Police Department has employed throughout the week. As you mentioned, there have been over close to 1,800 arrested this week. Many of them are now trickling out of the jail systems slowly but surely. Yesterday, Late last night, a judge ruled that the demonstrators that were being charged with misdemeanors would have to be let go. That was overturned. And I'm not sure what's happening in the legal realm at the moment with those arrestees, but I know that many of them have indeed been released and are among the crowds out here tonight.
Now, are you able, and I asked this about Christopher Cuomo when he called in earlier, because he's also in New York City, are you able to go to a shop? Are you able to mingle with other people, or are you kind of kept apart separately?
Right now, at this moment?
Yes.
We're totally penned in. I mean, if they wanted to, if they had enough manpower in the police, they could probably just arrest everybody. And they're actually, right now, while we're putting riot helmets on in the intersection of 29th Street, I'm not sure what's going to happen. The crowd is getting very restless, as you can hear around me. And indeed, the police are, as I said, putting riot helmets on.
Do people have protection from tear gas? Is tear gas being used or pepper spray?
No one has not, Robert. Only in a few isolated instances have I heard of any pepper spray being deployed. Primarily, these police are armed with billy clubs, and they have, as you're probably aware, 10,000 New York police officers on the streets. In addition to federal law enforcement, they have Capitol Police around, New York State Police, as well as other FBI, Secret Service, and other federal agencies. So we have a force of probably nearly 15 to 20,000. So it's been basically their tactics have been to just overwhelm the demonstrators.
Any sign of tasers, horses, or dogs?
I have seen cattle prods deployed on Monday by some of the officers who charged into the crowd at the People's Economic Human Rights Rally. That was time I've seen such things. There might have been other instances. There's demonstrations this week, Robert, have been very, there have not been any central locations. There have been sporadic demonstrations happening simultaneously at multiple locations around New York City. And so it's kind of hard to get a grasp on everything. There's an overwhelming amount of things happening. But I'm going to kind of just stay right here where I'm at. And see what goes down.
Now, you're at ground level. You're not like hoisted up above the ground. So
That's right. I'm at ground level.
And you see a massing of police forces fairly close by?
Yeah, I'm about five or six rows back from the intersection where the barricades are. And what appears to be happening is that the police are now forming a line to prevent media from filming. That's what it looks like from my vantage point, although it is hard to see everything. I'm kind of on my tiptoes looking overhead to people and all the different signs that I see as well. And it's getting tense, as you can hear. People are restless in this crowd.
Is there a lot of video taking place? Has everybody got a video camera and a tape recorder, or is that only a few?
Yes, many of the demonstrators are armed with cameras and microphones and still cameras as well. A lot of these people are indie media reporters. I see flashes going off all the time, camera flashes and video cameras.
How's the heat? Has anyone opened up a fire hydrant?
It's been hot. It's a bit muggy tonight. Extremely hot. But. Hello?
That's a familiar chanting.
Hello? I think I lost you. Hello?
Yeah, it sounds like something. Is there much focus on the war in Iraq?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Is there much focus on the war in Iraq?
There is, indeed. In fact, that's the rally that's happening down in Union Square right now that's being sponsored by United for Peace and Justice. That's not at Union Square. There's a vigil happening for the victims of the war in Iraq. Some of the signs I can read right now, end occupation, New Yorkers say no to Bush candidacy, Bush lies, thousands die, guilty of war crimes, crimes against peace, crimes against humanity, www.nodraftnoway.org, Moses for burning Bush, no W, let's not elect him this time either, George Bush, 981 dead and still lying, America, where is the outrage, IP on Bushes, lots of interesting signs, Axis of Evil, Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, no to Bush, sorry, Nader, Democrats, Republicans, war makers, strike breakers, and I can't read the rest of that. There's been all kinds of issues being protested this week, Robert. Each day has been a different theme. First day was economic and human rights. The second day was direct actions. Yesterday was labor. And today it's just kind of a lot of people got out of jail, and Bush is in town. He's giving his coronation speech tonight. So a lot of people wanted to have a presence near the garden. Which is where we are on 8th Avenue and 29th Street, which is just a block. The garden is in like 34th and 7th Avenue, so we're a few blocks from quote unquote ground zero where Bush is.
Being on Sunday, there were about 100 to 500,000 marchers. Have that many people stayed in the city, or have they pretty much left? I think we may have lost our man. V-Man, you still there?
No. Looks like that was it. Hopefully all is well in New York City. It's certainly better than staying home and watching television or doing business as usual. Of course, there's a real provocation in New York City. George the Bomber Bush is getting re-coronated and probably may well be re-selected in November. And there's, of course, the Republican National Convention happening in New York City. These are, of course, not the words of a mellow, dispassionate broadcaster. I'm partisan in this situation, and I'm not going to conceal it. You can tell me what you think about the whole scene, although what we try to do on this coming show, which is we're 20 minutes into, 6 to 8 here on Free Radio, is talk about local issues, and indeed local issues as they interact with national and international issues as well. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're listening to www.freakradio.org, also coming to you at 101.1 FM. Phone line here is 427-3772, and it looks like we have a call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Good evening, Robert. I have a brief report here. My name is Christopher Crone.
Ah, yes, I recognize you, Christopher. You actually, we just had a riotous report from the V-Man. It was in the middle of a huge protest that was barricaded by police, I think up near the coronation festivities.
Okay, that's where I am, too. So I'll give you a report then when I get to the candlelight vigil, which is down at Union Square.
Okay, so it sounds much mellower. Maybe you've just got a better cellular phone. Are you surrounded by lots of folks and police, or?
No, if you have a press pass, they allow you to be in these other zones.
So you're in the other zone, eh?
Well, I'm also sort of not, I don't want to go into the cage, and a lot of people I've met don't want to either, and they have taken off as a result, because they just don't feel like that's the right thing to do, to pen people in.
Now, by the cage, do you mean the area you're in or the area that perhaps the V-Man is in?
Probably where he is. There's several of those areas. They've barricaded each block. There's about 7 blocks of protesters, 5 blocks. Mm-hmm. And I would say, what did V-Man estimate? I'm going for 2,000-3,000.
He didn't actually give a number. Actually, he said thousands, I believe.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there was 5, but I'm just trying to be air on the conservative side, because we're always accused of blowing things out of proportion here. But It's a good number of people, and there's more keep coming all the time since I've been here for the last half hour. It's very circuitous to get here, and I followed some protesters and listened to their conversations with police, and they were told many, many different things. Some not true, and trying to, I guess, diffuse any sort of groups gathering.
Huh? Like, I mean,
we're about 4 blocks. 30th Street is 3 blocks from Madison Square Garden. That's the end of this rally, I believe. It goes from 30th to 23rd, down to 23rd.
Now, these streets are filled with people, right? Traffic has been pretty much stopped. Is that the situation?
Oh, no, that's been like that for a couple of days because of the way the police have set everything up. In fact, I went past many blocks in just getting here. They won't let you just come here. You have to go all the way down to 25th to get to where I am now on 28th. I had to go all the way around 28th and 8th Avenue is where I am.
What about people who live in these blocks? Do you have to have special credentials?
Or? Yeah, that's the whole thing. It gets into this situation where the police have to disseminate between, who's who and who lives in these blocks and who. I mean, I don't envy being them, but it's also a lot of selective enforcement kind of stuff that if you don't look the part, then you probably can't get through.
So what's your next move? You've been there since Saturday, and I take it you've been a participant or at least an observer of many of these protests. Have you been in a somewhat, favored position in the sense of not being in the crush of the crowd, but being somewhat distant from it? Have you been in the midst of it? What's it been like?
I've been in the crush of the crowd quite often. And if you have a press pass, it's not always honored either. It's hit and miss. Sometimes the police don't really care if you're covering it, and I've seen myself and lots of other people turned away when we were given the sense that we had access to a certain area. After they penned in all these people at the World Trade Center, Ground Zero, the other day, 200 plus, they put this big wrap plastic fencing material around them. I don't know what you call it. It must be a trade name for
Maybe
it.
Maybe it's this kind of stuff they have at the farmer's market to stop hippies in Santa Cruz.
Exactly.
From sitting down.
And it's orange, too, which I don't know if they realize the significance.
When you were mayor, orange. Actually, Chris, but go ahead.
But the orange alert system kind of thing.
There you go.
This stuff is orange.
Uh-huh.
But the way it was used, people taking out the garbage got involved in it, people who were just coming out of a restaurant. ended up being arrested. So it's as though, you know, they didn't disseminate between it. They couldn't. But also they jumped, you know, made a rushed decision, I thought. But
have you made your way into the Republican convention to talk to any folks in business suits?
I have been at many delegation meetings with Republicans. I have not been in the convention because the stories that I'm covering have to do with the folks who are on the outside of the convention. And it's pretty easy to have access to people who go inside. So I don't have a problem getting interviews generally with them.
So you didn't accompany Michael Moore as a bodyguard into the convention?
No, it's interesting. There have been some people who got in or who went in who probably, if they knew who they were, they might have denied them access.
So
there was Bob Mulholland, who is a political advisor in the state of California. He's very well known to a lot of folks. He actually got in one night, and he might not have been able to get in if they had recognized who he was. It's picking up pretty heavily here. And, you know, a lot of movement around, and it's hard to, you know, you don't know what's, you know, something's happening on one side, you don't know what reason, and the police have reacted in ways that weren't always clear to myself or demonstrators.
So, Chris, you're reporting for the Berkeley Daily Planet?
That's correct. If you go to berkeleydailyplanet.com, you can find my stuff, and there's a few other people. You might know Ocean Newman. He's also here reporting for the Berkeley Daily Planet.
Huh. And you've written a number of stories, and people can go to berkeleydailyplanet.com. Have you learned any new tactics that you would be using in your new role as professional agitator in Santa Cruz to help overturn laws that criminalize poor people?
Oh, are you giving me a job?
Suggestion.
You're putting words in people's mouths. I have seen a lot of heaviness here, and interesting. But I also think there's just incredible numbers of police. I've never seen it like before. You know, every corner.
Have you seen any creative tactics, Chris, you think are being effective in dealing with police and getting messages out in spite of the overwhelming police numbers?
Nothing that comes quickly to mind that I can pass along to you right now.
Uh-huh.
I don't. You know, getting around. Oh well, there's this one group that just marched in, was pretty funny. They have those things that people hold up at conventions for what the state you are. And they were, you know, representing all different states, right? They had those three-sided things, you know, those triangular things that go way up in the air that you see at conventions. But they had the state of fear, the state of disappointment, the state of sadness, you know. So they were holding them up and they were chanting as they walked. Big group of them, probably 50. I mean, they covered all the states. But it was that was, I thought, an effective message.
Now you're,
I don't know about tactics.
You're staying with friends there, with sympathizers?
Yes.
And, I mean, have you been watching television coverage at night?
Not all that much. A little bit of Chris Matthews, this guy that has a show called Hardball, and I also am a pretty faithful Jon Stewart fan.
I'm just wondering how what you see on the tube and in the papers comports with what you see on the ground with your own eyes.
Oh, without a doubt, local news will cover it much better than the national news. I saw that in Seattle, and I saw it other places. I am not satisfied with the effort that the press is putting in. I'll give you an example. You know, the New York Times had a story today about protesters not getting much coverage because the police are keeping them so far from the garden.
Police tactics, mute protesters, and message on the front page of the New York Times.
What's that?
I'm looking at the front page of the New York Times here. It says police tactics, mute protesters, and message.
Yeah, if you go deeper in that story. Okay, there's a movement going on right now. There's about 100 helmeted police officers going by me. And they're moving up toward the front of the stage. A lot of commotion right now. There's another truck moving in with barricades. Something's going on. You can hear a lot of people are running. I'm gonna cut it off, Robert. I'm gonna I know what's going on. There's a lot of commotion.
Well, call back if you got some more stuff to report, Chris.
Yeah, I just don't want to get in the middle of a lot of people with equipment here.
Okay. Thank you. And that was Christopher Crone, BerkeleyDailyPlanet.com reporter, and also occasional columnist here in Santa Cruz for the Good Times, a local teacher and a former mayor, and sometimes Free Radio Santa Cruz guest are on Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Not a heck of a lot, but every so often. You can now call in yourself, unless we get another New York correspondent calling in, 427-3772. And actually, if you beat the New York correspondent, we'll put you on the air because our phone does not discriminate, and neither do we. You are, in fact, on the air with Uncle Robert.
Hi. Hey, just real quick, but I want to free the line in case New York's trying to call. But there's a local issue that we could raise: is how come our politicians can get press passes and our free radio reporters can't, man? Where the hell do you get a press pass? I'll take my answer off the air.
No, take it on the air. It's okay. I mean,
what if Vinny's calling in, man? What if he's getting beat by cops?
All right, that's true. Okay. Okay. That's, of course, Phil Free, one of the most notorious of our indie media collective, who's also a man who plays on the streets and I would say frequently disregards the sacred downtown ordinances. The answer to that question, of course, is I have no idea, except I have a strong suspicion that there is discriminatory treatment of those with connections, official offices. That's pretty much it. Christopher Crone is a former mayor of Santa Cruz and a former city council member, whereas the V-Man is only a lowly reporter and a bagelry worker. So to heck with him. Actually, of course, it sounds like he's more in the thick of it than Christopher is, though that could be a superficial impression simply based on one or two accounts. But the fact of the matter is that the V-Man puts in more energy, if you're going to be comparative, in terms of reporting and has more skill reporting because of his experience than Christopher Crone. This is no reflection on Christopher's potential abilities to report, but the fact of the matter is V-Man has done it many hours a day for many, many years, actually, for a number of years anyway. This is Free Radio, 101.1 FM. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and you are potentially able to get on the air here at www.freakradio.org, or you can also go to Pages in Color. Pagesincolor.com is also a way you can get into a chat room, and in case there's a phone on and you want to ask a question, that's a good way to deal with it. I'm about to open up the chat room, so try that, and you'll be able to join whoever I'm talking to and myself and dig in. You're on Free Radio with Robert.
Robert, you should check out nyc.indymedia.com.
Okay.
.org, and it gives you all the most recent protest action.
Yeah, I was actually looking at that earlier before I came to the studio. Anything you noticed particularly you want to...
Well, they had some pictures of that sonic weapon that they have ready to employ. There's this weird kind of round-shaped sonic weapon. I don't know what exactly it does, if it makes people sick or does something to their ears, but they have that deployed. I saw some stories on indie media about it.
So people can see this if they go to...
nyc.indymedia.org. It's one of the, it's like the second story on the right-hand column where people put up the local news.
I was having
just like our indie media.
Have you been able to reach a local indie media? I've been able to do it in the last hour or
so. What do you mean the local indie media?
Santa Cruz indie media.
No, it's been down.
Ah.
It's been down all day. There's something wrong with that side anyway. They need to do something to it.
Huh.
But there's some pictures of an armored vehicle there that got deployed. They got a lot of shit. They're ready to... you know, get the forces out. There's also news about hackers that are hacking into the New York Stock Exchange and shutting down computers against Bush.
Huh.
There's the latest thing on the protesters that were supposed to be let go. What I saw last was the judge made a court order to let the protesters out. They've been in there 36, 40-odd hours, and they're letting them out trickle at a time because they're waiting until Bush speaks to let them all out because they don't want them all down there protesting again, you know what I mean? Making all that noise, being rambunctious. So they're trying to hold on to as many of the detainees that they have, and they're holding them in really bad conditions. Some of the floors are all messed up. I don't want to stay on the line either too long in case V-Man calls back or whoever, but I thought I'd just slip that in there.
Good advice. I'll pass that on. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. So, again, if you want to follow the breaking news at the New York City outside the Republican National Convention, go to nyc.indymedia.org. We have another caller, I think. We do. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert.
Yes.
V-Man.
Hey, V-Man.
My man.
You are on the air.
Okay, I just miraculously escaped the pen. The police just moved in after that call. A few minutes after that call, they sent a whole line of riot cops on the left side of the demonstration between 28th and 29th Street. And they were all putting their helmets on. They were, I have a friend that's up one of the floors in one of the buildings along 30th filming for Democracy Now! And he called me just in time and told me that the word is they're going to have the streets cleared by 10 p.m., which is approaching 9:30 here on the East Coast. And so they it appears that they have moved in on this crowd. They've penned in people between 28th and 29th and between 20th and 30th. They're separate. There are a bunch of cops right now cruising down 8th Avenue. I'm at the intersection of 24th Street now, making my way back towards Lower Manhattan to the IMC. But I just wanted to update you on what's happening. There's probably going to be some mass arrests. I'm not sure what they're going to do, if they're going to crack heads, if they're going to use tear gas, or what they've got in store. But they're definitely going to have the streets cleared by 10 p.m.
Huh. Now, are you in a trapped situation? You can't get out?
No, I got out. I got out just in the nick of time. They were just shutting the pens, and I escaped. Miraculously, the last one out of that pen between 28th and 29th. And there goes a bunch more on scooters. 15 or so more cops cruising up into the area where the demonstration is happening. I myself am making my way towards Lower Manhattan, as I said, away from the area, just primarily because of my back and physical limitations at the moment. So I really can't get any kind of physical altercations with police.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's more cops. More cops on mopeds. About six more cruising through 25th, and they're going up to the demonstration area. I'll just keep you updated when I get back to the MC and find out what happens.
Sounds good.
Take care.
Thanks, V-Man. That's the V-Man in a narrow escape from the what may be another mass arrest coming up, as he says the police are intending to clear the area by 10 o'clock, according to a Democracy Now! A contact that V-Man has there in New York City. Phone lines here are open, 427-3772. I will be interrupting whatever I'm doing to put on your phone calls and phone calls from New York City. I'll also be following local stuff as best I can. The couple of quick updates locally while we're waiting for news from New York, or let's put it this way, there's not too much we can do about what's going on in New York, but it's certainly important to follow its, well, it's kind of a vicarious thrill, if nothing else. And there are people there engaging in real democracy and real protest. I'm just wondering what's going to happen tomorrow and the next day, but certainly today it's going on. Here in Santa Cruz, some people have come together to take the sleeping ban to court. And this is, you might say, oh no, not again, here we go. The sleeping ban, for those who don't know, is a Municipal Code Section 6.36010A, actually, is the official subsection, the sleeping ban, part of the camping ordinance, which makes it illegal for people who are outside to fall asleep. It actually is broader than that. If you're inside a non-domicile building, such as a restaurant, it's also illegal to fall asleep after 11 o'clock at night and before 8:30 in the morning. During that period of time, the act of sleeping is illegal. And, of course, this is a law designed to give the police the tools to do what they want with homeless people they find outside, of whom estimates range from 1,500 to 2,000 reside, that is to say, sleep every night, in the Santa Cruz city area, not the county, where I estimate 8,000 to 10,000 or more, but the city, which is only 1,500 to 2,000. But since there is only space on the shelter floors of churches, for 40 people or so, that means the overwhelming majority of these folks are at the mercy of the police anytime they want to go up to them if they appear to be sleeping or if they actually are covered up with a blanket. It's called the blanket ban. That's another anti-homeless code section, 6.36010B. They can be cited, arrested, searched, and in essence, they can actually be taken into custody if the police officer so wishes. It's only an infraction, but if it's done twice within 24 hours, it's considered to be or can be charged as camping. And camping is supposedly setting up permanent bedding for the night with the intention of remaining overnight. But police frequently use these statutes as they will, in the same way that officers like Bechtel downtown use the downtown ordinances to simply get rid of folks that they don't feel or to warn folks that they don't feel are behaving, quote, properly. Anyway, the sleeping ban has been the subject of many protests in Santa Cruz, mass sleepouts, sequential sleepouts, fasts, sit-ins at city council, lie-ins at city council, the coffee clatch and the city council offices, a whole meeting of the industrial workers of the world in 1994 slept on the streets one night at their annual meeting here in Santa Cruz in order to protest the sleeping ban. That was the year that the Kennedy-Rodkin regime, which has now returned to power, actually never left power in a way. I guess in a sense it did, but the spirit remained there. Passed the downtown ordinances, which added to the sleeping ban, making, in essence, all kinds of protests vulnerable to police action, the kinds of police actions that are going on in New York City. In Santa Cruz, if you lie down on the sidewalk without a permit, that's considered to be illegal behavior. If you sit down on the sidewalk anywhere that is closer than 14 feet to a building or 50 feet to a change-making machine, which rules out about 95% of the sidewalk, that's a $162 crime. Rather than recite all this for people that pretty much know it, for those who are regular listeners, for those who aren't regular listeners and are interested, you can give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Be happy to enlighten you, and you can also go to the Huff website, www.huffsantacruz.org. Huff is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and get more information there. But in court, there has never been an injunction sought against the sleeping ban. An injunction is a court order saying that behavior by authorities or individuals is simply banned or illegal. And to enjoin the enforcement of the sleeping ban would mean to say to the police, you cannot enforce this law. It violates constitutional rights. It's defective for other reasons. It's simply not a law you can enforce. Now, that's never been tried in state courts. And it's not going to be tried now, but it's probably going to be tried, I mean, it is going to be tried, as far as I know, in federal court. And that is a place where, at least that's what Attorney Kate Wells believes, if there's any hope of getting some kind of human rights restoration in Santa Cruz, that's the place to go. And what this involves is tracking a number of people, actually only need one really good case, but the more cases the better, to show that people have no other options, and yet at the same time they're being harassed by police for sleeping and doing what they need to do of necessity because of the nature of the human condition. And what will then be done is, I understand it, attorneys will go into court, actually one attorney will go into court and argue this case before a federal judge seeking an immediate injunction to protect the health and safety of the essentially 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz who are affected by the sleeping ban, the Kennedy sleeping ban. I call it the Kennedy sleeping ban because he's the mayor. He has supported it. He has actually had protesters like myself arrested at city council for peaceful actions, trying simply to even have a dialogue about changing this abusive ordinance. So if you're interested, you can get more information about this by going to the Huff website, www.huffsantacruz.org. Actually, that won't be posted for a while, at least for a day or two, maybe longer. But there's a flyer that you can pick up at the Huff table. And the Huff table is currently located, even as I speak, in front of Borders Bookstore. at Soquel and Pacific Avenue, where it shares space with Copwatch, which is another group that is concerned with police misconduct. And there are forms there both that will describe what's going on in terms of what you should do if you've been ticketed and how you can who you can get in touch with so that you can be a part of this lawsuit, and also some actual forms you can specifically fill out about incidents that have happened to you so we can gather these incidents together, get them to the attorney involved, and then get them to the court. And we're going to be giving you more information. I'll be giving you more information about this as we proceed. But I just want to give you a heads up that there is now a commitment to taking the sleeping ban to court. So that's a piece of good news. So while I take a breather and check over the internet a bit, I'm going to play you a little bit of some more colorful activity from the streets. So stay with us.
With Joe Williams. Joe, you are running for Congress. What does Sam Farr have to say about all this, your chief Democratic Party opponent?
Oh, gosh. It's hard to get his take on anything in terms of a position because depending on the audience he talks to, he'd say...
And this, of course, is Joe Williams, who is running on the Peace and Freedom Party ticket against Representative Sam Farr, who has actually done very little for poor and homeless people in this area, refused to address issues of police misconduct. But my main concern about him has been on a more international level, where he's declined to demand that the U.S. troops return from Iraq. He's voted for the war appropriations, and he continues to support depleted uranium weapons, DU weapons. Joe Williams takes the right position on these issues. And if folks are interested in calling in to Representative Farr and asking him, how about a town hall meeting that says U.S. out of Iraq, or that actually discusses these issues so we can try to find some way to, as a community, to take a stand, maybe declare this issue an amnesty zone, this area an amnesty zone, maybe find some way of disinvesting locally, maybe find some way to present the issue with, at least to show the public sentiment to anyone listening and to other communities who can perhaps feel empowered by what we're doing. You can give a call to Farr at 429-1976, 429-1976, 24-hour number. You should be able to reach him. We did a phone-in to Farr, we being the Vigil Against Two Wars, which is a group of folks concerned about the war on the poor and the war against Iraq, this weekend from the mall, from the Pacific Garden Mall, the sidewalks of Pacific Avenue, and we filled up his machine. I didn't actually myself, and these weren't people from the organization Huff. They were people walking down the street who are local constituents or visitors to the area who are very concerned about the issue and wanted to speak directly to a congressional representative to see if they could, hope beyond hope, get some kind of action, which of course they aren't going to get. But that's what you're supposed to do in a democracy. Before you march in and start direct action and civil disobedience, you try every other alternative first before you take the more directed alternatives. And of course, to my mind, those alternatives have already been tried, and nothing has happened. But for many, you try what is the lesser before you turn to the greater. It's also a greater risk. If you engage in direct action, nonviolent direct action, you're likely to suffer penalties for it, whether it may be jail, it may be arrest, it may be mistreatment by police or by jail authorities, as people in New York City well know. But often that's the only way to bring issues forward. And I know that there's going to be a Vets for Peace, not a direct action as far as I know, but simply a protest on the sidewalk outside the Capitola military recruiting station out on 41st Avenue, which is about a block past toward the freeway, the Capitola Mall. And it's you'll see the protesters there 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. I'm going to be here in the studio, so I won't be there. Otherwise, I would be out there. So you might want to check that out. Let's get back to Joe Williams talking about the issues that Representative Farr doesn't want to talk about.
Message. So, I mean, nominally he did vote specifically against the Iraq war. and appropriations for the Iraq war. So you give
it for the war budget, of course.
Well, then, of course, votes for every military appropriations and authorizations bill that comes down the line, which is more than the next 10, you know, nearest countries combined in terms of spending and outlay. So it's hard to take him seriously, you know, when it comes to issues of war and peace. Plus, he refuses to call for immediate withdrawal. He says, well, we're there, we have to stay there, we have to put the UN in or do something. I'm not sure what his position is, but it does not include withdrawing the troops now. Get out of the country, stop the foreign occupation. That's not his position. Interestingly enough, it is the position of every candidate running against him.
Except for the somewhat gun-shy Mark Risley.
Well, it's
Republican candidate.
It's his personal position, and he's made that very clear to me, and I thought we could make some, you know, public publicity hay out of that. But the Republican Party, who's actually decided to kick him some bucks down, told him to tone it down on that front. So he has to play party line, I guess, to work within his party. They're imposing some kind of party discipline on him, and he can't be very public with his immediate withdrawal now position, although he does support that personally.
How can people assist you in your quixotic campaign to be a congressional representative and replace Representative Farr?
Well, at this point, I would say write letters to the editor asking
U.S. out of Iraq.
Well, asking for more debates and forums and interviews of the opposing candidates. I mean, there seems to be all kind of poofrah about assembly races and city council races and this and, you know, the presidential race. But when it comes to the congressional race, it's off the radar. Nobody's covering it. There's nothing going on. Farr might as well be running unopposed by any opposition candidates for all the press that's out there about it. So if folks, you know, want true oppositional politics to actually appear in the public eye, contact the media, contact print, television, radio, and tell them to interview the opposition candidates, everybody opposing Farr. You know, we need the press. They're asleep on the congressional race.
We've been listening to Joe Williams on this musical, peaceful, balmy summer night on Pacific Avenue. But there's still a war going on overseas, and Najaf is still under U.S. bombardment and surroundment. Not that I'm a big fan of al-Sadir's thuggish attacks on women, but he is an Iraqi, and then again, he's defending against U.S. troops.
I guess so. I mean, anybody fighting against foreign occupation of their land, I tend to be on their side.
Take him away, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Here on the streets on Pacific Avenue at Pacific and Cathcart in front of Taqueria Vallarta. It's around midnight on Friday night, August 20th. And we have a debate on the issue of the war.
We're anti-war right here, protesting. We all got friends over there. It's kind of scary once we look at the news and stuff, and we don't know if they're okay or not, because we don't hear from them in months, weeks.
What's your name?
Jose Leal from Watsonville.
And you were saying?
I was born in Scotland.
Send me back.
I was born in Scotland. I immigrated here. Like, I'm fucking an illegal alien just like all y'all.
I'm a fucked up alien. I'm a U.S. alien.
Well,
you were saying you were concerned about the draft, right?
Oh, definitely.
Tell me about it.
Well, you got a recorder in there? Oh, yeah, that is your fucking recording. Yeah.
Where's all the...
Yeah, I'm fucking... Hey... He's got a bug right there. Yeah, I'm fucking is concerned about the draft. I mean, like, I was fucking born in Scotland. Like, you know, like, I ain't got nothing left for me here. Like, I'm trying to go back to Scotland.
Scotland.
Got
some bitch and beer right there.
So drink.
What do you mean you don't want to go to Scotland, bro?
I do. I got a fucking beer right here. Who wants to fucking drink
this? John Kerry.
Fuck Bush.
Oh, fuck John Kerry. Shoot him in the fucking face. Get fucking Edwards as president.
Hey, you don't want to go back to Iraq.
Fucking, like, I don't want to go fucking back to Iraq. I want to fucking, like, get John Kerry elected. Then I want to shoot him in the fucking face. Then I want to fucking get Edwards as president, man. Edwards is where it's at.
But fuck, I don't know what happened. Howard Dean.
Howard Dean fucking fell down the fucking shitter. Howard Dean fell down the fucking shitter. Fucking Kerry is where it's at. And then you gotta fucking get his fucking vice president elected.
What happened in Iraq?
Fuck Bush. Iraq was a fucking shithole. It was a quagmire. It was another fucking Vietnam.
Over there?
Yeah, I was fucking over there.
For how long?
I was over there for fucking 6 months.
You get back?
I got back fucking January.
Want to talk about it at all?
No, not really.
Where's all the buds at?
Fucking, where are the buds at? The fucking buds are fucking Afghanistan, man.
No,
it's all fucking, dope. That's all the fucking shit they want. They all want fucking dope. Fucking like, I mean like fucking Halliburton. All it is fucking like oil pipeline going through fucking Afghanistan. I'm serious. Fucking researching. Feeding
for oil. It's not worth it.
It's seriously, it's all a fucking war for oil, and that's all it fucking is.
It's not the oil, baby. It's the crank.
It's the crank. And it's the fucking dope. It's the fucking oil. It's all of it. Fucking crank it. They're just gonna fucking pipe it through fucking Afghanistan.
That's right.
That's all it is.
Where's Canada camera at?
It's fucking right fucking there. The Canada camera is right fucking here.
Man, you're on the air with Robert. Hello? 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 Well, let's try again. Sorry, we lost that caller. Let's give it a second try. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM. I hope the caller calls back. This is Free Radio in Santa Cruz. This is Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides. Twice weekly show. This show goes till 8. We cover a lot of topics, focusing a lot on the war, and of course, we have a lot of call-ins from New York City, where there are at least two Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcasters. I should say one broadcaster and one BerkeleyDailyPlanet.com reporter, Chris Krohn, who's giving us some information about what's going on there in New York City as well. We should be hearing from them again, or we might be. Plus, you're hearing from interviews from folks here in Santa Cruz, which perhaps is more important here because those are the folks that live here, that come here, work here, shop here, buy here, and eventually probably die here, but that's another story. If you want to call in, 427-3772 is the number to call. Please give it a try. My apologies for the last caller. I think we just fumbled the mic here. That can occasionally happen. Here's a little more from the street while we're waiting for some calls from your phone.
Okay, it's about 10 to 2 in front of the Pacific Trading Company. I want to say boycott the Pacific Trading Company, but I'm not sure if it's appropriate to say it at this point. Probably is.
Boycott the Pacific Trading Company.
I'm down here, and I notice a sort of lot of activity going on. I see there's a man with a sign on his back, phone in against the war. And he's actually having people telephone. What's going on here?
He's taking a picture of your car. It's from Japan. He's gonna.
Well, you better collect that money. So I parked my car on the.
Call 4761 9 2 9 1 9 7 6.
20-minute zone here, which I may have to vacate soon. I see this woman working on a sign. Iraqi vet. Or no one, tell us your story. All right. And we have Christopher Robin, who's getting people to telephone into Congressional Representative Sam Farr, urging the U.S. to get its
paid mercenaries out of Iraq before they do more murdering and dying there. What's been happening with the protest, Tom? You've been here for a while.
Yes, well, I got here about 12, and Chris set up the table, and we have about 6 people hanging out. Is it Valerie playing music? And then we, the other Valerie's making a sign. Then we have people handing out flyers, and Chris has managed to get about 20 people or so to call in today. So. Been very successful so far.
Calling the Washington office of Representative Forrest?
Yes, we're calling the Washington office.
Why not the local office?
Because the Santa Cruz office mailbox is full. So. Yeah.
Because of your diligent work yesterday.
Yes.
What about the Pacific Trading Company? I know there's been a certain controversial quality. This green fence here was created by the Pacific Trading Company, at least at its present location, a year ago to eliminate the messy homeless singers, hangers out at a cost of $7,000. How are they doing? Are you having a good relationship with them?
And no trouble so far today, but they did come out and close their doors that were open before we set up. But, yeah.
All right. Valerie Christie, you have a Iraqi vet sign you've just finished. Nice looking sign. What's happening here? Anything? Any comments?
What's happening is that my back is stiff from sitting on the sidewalk so long.
Insufficient benches. Get those benches.
No, but I'm just trying to get us together here because now we can get a hold of some vets. Hey,
some of you should
come and tell us your story.
Start grabbing those people by the scruff of the neck and bring in the vets.
Yeah.
All right.
And speaking of vets, let's hear a little bit more of the earlier drunken denunciations you heard from some folks who said they were vets around midnight on Pacific Avenue some days prior to that vigil against two wars, which actually you were hearing the Sunday version of that vigil. There was a Saturday 12 to 4 and a Sunday 12 to 4 space of time. But here, let's hear from a few people who we've heard from before. Let's hear the rest of that interview.
Dude, we're not even 21.
Fucking
we're not 19 even allowed
year olds,
to drink.
We can't even
fucking
yeah.
drink.
Exactly.
It's not worth it.
It's not fucking worth
it,
worth man.
It. Fuck it.
Hey, you're a bitch.
And there you have it. The word from the street.
And actually that was Bill, who says he was stationed for 6 months or at least at some point in Kabul, Afghanistan, not so much Iraq. So it's Saturday around noon on August 21st, and we're talking to a man with a sign that says, lazy, worthless bum needs rich wife or some spare change. Have you been any marriage offers lately?
None whatsoever.
You're here in front of the Union Grove Music. Has a musician perhaps come up and offered to add a little musical accompaniment?
None whatsoever. All the girls here are 23 years old. I need one 65.
Well, what about wealthier, younger women? Do you have something against younger women?
They'll drive you insane.
The tape is turning over, so hang with us.
So we're talking with
Ugly Jim.
And Ugly Jim, you're looking pretty handsome today for Ugly Jim kind of terminology. Is this an attempt to lure women into, for perhaps looking at for your internal spiritual side?
Absolutely. I have no idea what you said, but I'll agree.
All right. Well, I'm glad you agree. We have a little kind of competition from the vehicles pulling into the parking lot, the 4x4 vehicles. You have an associate here. Ken Carroll is nearby. Have you gotten any hassle from police for people sitting nearby you with
yeah,
the sign?
I got a ticket the other day, and a friend of mine stopped to say goodbye. He's going to New Mexico. He just sat down. I put my sign away, and the lady, Pam Cop, said I had my sign up, and I didn't. So I'm
Pam Bechtel came up to you.
She was up at the end of the block. When she saw my sign, it was up. But as soon as he sat down, I put it down.
Right.
And she said, no, you had your sign up. And I said, no, I put my sign down as soon as he sat down. So I'm going to take a jury trial on it. I'm going to
get a jury trial, but you will get a trial in front of a judge. I encourage you to disqualify the referee basket. You got to wait about a month. You go to the basement of the county building, and you tell them that you wish to disqualify the referee because you believe that she is prejudiced, because she, in my view, she is.
Okay, I don't know her.
Yeah,
do
no.
I get a lawyer? Do I get a court-appointed lawyer? No?
That's an infraction, so you don't get a lawyer.
That's me, huh?
Just, you know, you want to come to a Huff meeting. Once you've pled not guilty and you come to the Huff meeting,
we can try to give you some tips.
All right.
And I'll give you the times of the HUP meeting for those who don't know. It's every Wednesday at 8:30 at Baker's Square.
Okay, where that is.
8:30 in the morning.
Do I have to put up bail money when I go in there?
No, you don't have to put up any bail money. Usually the ticket doesn't appear for a couple of weeks on the computer, maybe even longer. Then you go in and you, again, disqualify basket, citing 170.6 CCP, which I'll give you, I'll write that down for you, which is the code section. They will put it in another court. You go into that court and you say, I plead not guilty. Then you call the HUF line, 423-HUF, and say, help, help.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that.
Have you gotten any other tickets?
Just for panhandling, you know, for like that.
From Pam Bechtel or from somebody else?
From a lot of them, you know. But they use any excuse to get you in. They kind of do a selective enforcement. It seems like they single me and a couple others out, and yet other people can sit there in groups of four or five, and they don't bother them, you know.
Even with signs or no?
Yeah.
Now, what was the last ticket you got prior to this ticket for having a, was it this lazy, worthless bum sign?
No, same thing, having somebody come up and sit down and talk to me or something, you know. Like that, or for being after night, after dark, too.
So you're just seated silently after dark with a sign, you've been given a ticket?
Yeah, still got a ticket. I didn't have a sign, though. I was just asking.
Yeah. Verbally?
Yeah.
Okay. And how long, in the last year, how many tickets would you say you've gotten?
About 11.
And you're not exaggerating?
No, no.
Most of these from the same officers or from only...
Different ones. They change around here a lot. You know.
Haven't been particularly... Have you gotten more than one ticket from Pam Bechtel?
I think that's the first one, and maybe the second. It is the second.
What other ticket did you get?
Same thing. Somebody sitting next to me. Same thing.
It doesn't look like you have too much company, eh?
No.
Yeah. You look like you could be a menace.
Well,
I mean, look
I want me to be antisocial or something, huh?
And you've heard other people been getting tickets, too,
everybody's
or just you?
Getting them. Everybody, you know. But they just, not everybody, no. They just kind of select some of us and give them to us, you know.
Now, how many people you say in the last week, without exaggeration, that you know have gotten tickets?
Oh, three, yeah.
Anybody here that I should talk to?
Well, you could talk to them about I think one of them got a ticket for sitting on the curb the other day.
Sitting on this little planter area that's three or four inches up.
Private property. Yeah.
Private property, and you're sitting on it.
You get a ticket.
They have the obligation to tell you it's trespass. I don't think it's posted as private property.
I don't see it either. I don't see no sign saying keep off the curb.
Pam Bechtel gave that ticket?
Yeah, to the guy, one of those guys.
So she gave a ticket for the
The kid on the end down there, that part.
I'll go talk to him. Yeah. We've been talking with...
All right. Ugly Jim.
Thanks, Ugly Jim.
Thank you. But I'll call that HUP line, too.
And we have an anti-Bush spare changer. What is your problem, sir? What is your name?
My name is Zach.
You have red hair, a backpack, and a watch with a demonic face on it. What more could we want to get rid of you? What's been happening here? Anything exciting?
People have been giving us money.
So the three of you are seated together in criminal violation of the panhandling ordinance. Has that been a problem?
No. Well, actually, it has.
No, because we're all 3 feet apart, just barely. So they can't give us a ticket right now.
If we sit on a fucking curb and the cop walks by, then they'll give us a $170 ticket for bullshit.
Are you speaking from experience?
Yeah.
What's your name?
My name's Jay.
And Jay, when did you get a ticket?
I didn't get a ticket. He did.
I'm sorry.
All my people in my crew got tickets. So.
Okay. Now, what have people in your group gotten tickets for?
Sitting on the curb, doing this shit, leaning up against the curb, not being 3 feet apart.
Now, by the curb, you don't mean the curb of the street. You mean the little curb of the Union Grove kind of planter, which is covered with kind of old, graying, kind of withered plants and so forth.
That don't
cigarette
sound like
butt.
Bullshit to you.
You bet. So, how long have you been here in this location?
Every day.
And in the last week, how many citations would you realistically estimate that you've seen been given for such things?
Probably three a day in people in my group.
Okay. And here we have a man looking at a citation. Can I take a look at that?
Yeah.
Okay, this is a citation, transient, dated the 19th of August, which is the day before yesterday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And it's signed by Officer Pam Bechtel, badge number 437.
She's a fucking bitch.
Now, what do you have against poor Pam Bechtel?
She bitches all day fucking long for bullshit.
I've gotten,
man.
Tickets
from her.
I mean, she has a house to sleep in. I sleep
under a fucking bridge. Leave my shit alone. Fuck, dude.
Now, when you say 10, are you using poetic license, or do you actually have 10 citations? You're talking about...
In the past
3 months, I guess, I've gotten 10 tickets.
From Pam Bechtel?
Yeah.
Not from other officers?
No, she's the only one who's
RoboCop.
Given me a ticket so far.
Oh, yeah, RoboCop's bad.
Yeah, RoboCop's a bitch.
We'll get to him in a moment. Now, panhandling in a group of two or more is what the citation is for. What kinds of tickets has Pam Bechtel given you? And we're talking with...
I've gotten littering for throwing rolly butts on the ground. I've gotten a couple of jaywalking tickets. I got one for walking on the red light. This is the third ticket, just exactly like this one that I've gotten. When people come up and sit down next to me, you know, they give me the ticket because I'm the one sitting here spanging, and the customers walking by, the people who give me money, who want to sit and talk, they do so. And I'm the one who gets the ticket.
Your name is?
Michael Williamson, right there.
And Michael, have you been to court in any of these tickets?
No.
You may have some warrants outstanding pretty soon.
I probably already do. I hope not, though.
Again, my advice to you is the same as I gave to Ugly Jim, which is to disqualify the referee. Go into the basement of the county building, find out all the tickets that are against you, get a court date in another court than the referee's court. The referee is a woman named Kim Baskett. You disqualify her, then you go up to another court and you plead not guilty. Then you go to the Huff meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, or give us a call at 423-HUFF. And we haven't got lawyers. We can give you some advice on how to defend yourself.
All right. I don't think I'll actually do that, though.
Right. But that's one option you have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, how did Pam treat you? This last citation was the last one you got from Pam Bechtel?
Yes.
And how did that go? Give us a description of how that went down.
Well, she always talks real nice, and, you know, like... The worst thing that's ever come out of her mouth is, oh, come on, guys, I don't want to babysit you today.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I guess she's just doing her job, I reckon. I don't know. She don't make the laws, she only enforces them, right?
Well, I think she chooses to enforce where she wants to enforce.
Yeah.
Give you a warning.
What's that?
She could give you a warning, she could tell you not to do it. She could ignore it.
Well, in all fairness, she always comes up and gives us quite a few warnings.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. But see, I think it's so much bullshit, I don't give a fuck about the fucking warnings, dude.
Your name is?
Jay.
Your name is?
Zach.
Zach, so you do get warnings?
Yeah, we get a lot of warnings. Yeah, she'd yell at me for talking to people while standing.
Well, do other officers treat you in the same way that she does, or does she seem to particularly single people out?
She particularly singles people out.
Would you say that as well, Mike? Would you agree with that, or do you think it's... what's your feeling about that?
Yeah, she comes down and bothers us more than she does the hippies on the other corner.
What about other officers? Do they bother you, or just mainly her?
Well, she's the main officer.
There are other officers who are not.
Yes, there are other officers during other times to walk through here. But see, we're not usually out here during them times of days. So we just work on sort of a little bit of a schedule that don't. Like, I'm always in bed by 11, so I don't never see RoboCop.
RoboCop comes on late at night, or?
Yeah.
Well, there are other officers
during the day.
There are officers who are here during the day. Usually they're in dark blue, whereas Pam Bechtel is in light blue. You ever see these officers walk by in dark blue?
Yeah, I have.
And have they ever given you a ticket?
No.
Never?
Never. Never even looked at me.
They ever given you a ticket?
No, I've never gotten a ticket before.
How about you, Jay?
RoboCop and that bitch, that's all it is.
RoboCop and Officer Bechtel?
Yeah.
RoboCop, though, he'll warn your ass, and then he'll take you straight to jail. He said, fuck the tickets. He'll just take you straight. You know what I mean?
That's the African-American Officer Perry we're talking about.
Yes.
Thank you very much, guys. Anything you want to say to Free Radio folks?
What up? Help the squatters.
Okay.
Huh?
Anything you want to say to Free Radio?
Yeah. Fuck all this shit.
Thank you.
Individual observing the bumper stickers on the vehicle. Probably see some you agree with, some you disagree with.
I think the one that's most important is the separation of church and state inclinations, which I think is one of the more dangerous inclinations of the Bush administration. No. We'll end up with civil wars like the rest of the damn world, if we can't keep the church and state separate, as the sentiments indicated on your vehicle indicate.
The good work. I have to agree with you on that issue.
What is this, Radio Free Santa Cruz?
It is indeed, or Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, well.
So you're a man who doesn't believe in having a pastor run the country?
No. And what's particularly amusing is when Bush, in his role as president, goes around blessing people. He sent his blessings and all this kind of stuff out, I think, to some of the people he sent to die in Iraq.
Well, blessings which and is, bombs, right?
Yeah, quite a combination.
It is. It's difficult to keep the sign up with the wind here. Anything you disagree with on the vehicle you want to point out?
I haven't seen all the... I hate Budweiser, incidentally. It's piss beer. I mean, you can't possibly have a Budweiser sign on your vehicle here with all these other profound sentiments.
Read it very closely.
It says Budweiser.
No, read closer.
Bud is wiser.
Bud is wiser. There you are. It's a very kind of going to fool you at first glance. Well, any comments about the war in Iraq?
I think we need to bring the boys home. And girls. Excuse me.
And girls. Thank you. We're talking with
Alexia.
And
Angie.
And Alexia, you have a... All right! And you have a comment about the car?
The car is captivating.
You feel captivated?
I feel captivated. I find I can't take my eyes off it.
Right. That's part of my master plan, you see. Watch out for white slavers at work on Pacific Avenue.
Yeah, yeah.
Be careful about that sort of thing.
Be careful, though. It could be a driving hazard because people will be reading it and then not looking at the road.
It might dazzle you. You might forget about
Maybe
your...
That's why there's the dent in it. So people are reading the wonderful car.
Actually, that was the driver's fault. We won't get into that at this time. Any comments about the war in Iraq and what you're going to do to end it?
I have very few comments. I tend to be kind of unoutspoken about that, but I do what I can in my own little ways.
I expect you to come back with some ideas.
Okay.
What about you? What are you doing to end the war in Iraq?
Calling the governor.
What are you calling him? An idiot, a fool, or a criminal? I want to
call him. Say hi.
Well, it's not really the governor who controls the situation, though presumably he could come out against the war if he wanted.
I don't know. I did a lot of stuff this week. A lot of wonderful things to help the U.S. and California.
Really? Like what?
Great place to, you know, do that kind of stuff.
The governor did this or you did this?
I did this.
What did you do?
I wrote a letter to the governor.
What did you say?
About the war.
Well, it's time to get cracking on the war. Now, you've done your work on the other side. Now you've got to do more, more, and more. What's that?
I'm trying to get bumper stickers here.
Well, that's one approach. We're talking with
Renee Waldron.
Renee, you're giving out some free admission to Ronnie and Connie Brothers' free concert on today at 6 p.m. What's this about?
It's trying to get the Lord to save your life.
So this is Christian propaganda, eh?
No.
Well, so now you've been around town for a while.
Since 1957.
And you say that your old man, your father, was an old radical?
Yes, George Waldron, radical.
And what issues was he particularly radical?
Against the whole Board of Supervisors and getting the veterans' rights back for them and getting the Veterans Memorial Building back.
Was he successful?
Yes, he was.
And how did he change things?
By protesting and getting arrested a lot. And
really? And give me an example of one instance of how this worked.
I try arresting 800 veterans all at one time.
Here in Santa Cruz or?
Right down the street, right at the Veterans Memorial Building.
And what day, what do you remember what year that was?
That was 1993.
And what was the issue?
Getting the city Parks and Recreation want to take over the whole building and say it doesn't belong to veterans, but it's the Veterans Memorial Building. It belongs to them.
What do you think George would have thought of the war in Iraq and the veterans who are being wounded and killed over there?
He would have said, send the boys home and let the old bucks go in and do the war.
Now, wait a minute. Are you suggesting our Fuhrer, George Bush, and President John Kerry should go over and fight the war?
Oh, yes, he really should.
Well, a sensible woman at last. Do I get another hug? So So we're talking with...
I'm Ron DeHood.
You were telling us about the history of the Vets Memorial Building.
That's right. It was in 1932, I do believe, it was on a charter that went to the vote of the people. A certain percentage of the taxes was to pay for that. And it was not belong, does not belong to the Parks and Rec. And it should be only used for veterans affairs, and that should be it. Thank you.
Thank you. We heard today, actually, from a Skidmark, Bob Duran, who has been working at the Veterans Building for 6 years, and that the veterans aren't really getting a fair shake now there, that it's kind of a, it's been the management is, he doesn't like the management because he feels the vets are being kind of crowded out. There's not much benefit being given to them. What do you, any sense of that?
I don't know who this gentleman is, but he's very correct. The veterans are not getting a fair shake. And it's for the veterans, however they choose to use it.
Any suggestions for how that could be changed?
Yes, get rid of the current board of supervisors that think that way, and the current city council that are anti-military and anti-veterans.
Well, what about the board of directors, the nonprofit board of directors of the Veterans Hall, who I think control the Veterans Hall?
Some of them are too rednecked to be running it, and they have no business running it, and most of them aren't veterans to begin with.
How can we get out of Iraq?
Send George Bush over there to fight the war himself and all the government officials over there, then we should be done with it.
You're under arrest.
Thank you so kindly. I've never been arrested before. How nice. But I used to work at the jail.
Thank you. Okay, we're talking with Bill. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Chloe.
Hi.
So you're a man who's observed businesses and how they treat poor people, and you're a poor guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
So what have you heard? What have you seen? What's happening?
A lot of police, roust people, like, when they're just sitting. Like, we can't sit on a planter, and they kick us out for that. They cite us. If you actually verbally ask for change, you get a citation for that. It's just bad. We always get kicked out of where we always sit and, like, get harassed by police.
All right, man.
And it's just pretty rough. I mean, especially when you're just trying to eat. So.
Now, do you have any officers who are worse than others, or is it just a general policy?
Willie, we call him RoboCop.
Officer Brandt?
Yeah, that guy. And Pam.
Yeah, Pam Bechtel.
Yeah, her. Yeah.
Have you yourself gotten tickets from Pam?
Actually, I have not, but I've had a lot of friends that have.
And what kinds of tickets have you seen in the last week or so?
Panhandling. I think I've seen a couple open containers, that kind of thing.
And this is here on Pacific Avenue?
Yeah, right here on Pacific Avenue.
And how does Pam usually deal with that? How does she approach that?
Oh, she's very, very hostile, actually. She's, like, just yells.
She has such a smile on her face.
Yeah, because she likes giving tickets. Yeah.
So, what's the last time you remember seeing her give a ticket?
A couple days ago, actually.
What did she do?
She was just very rude and, like, told us to get out of there, and then she wrote one of my friends a ticket. I can't remember what it was for, though. So.
What about you, Clay? What have you observed in this situation?
I don't know.
Okay.
Not down here as much as he is.
You better come down more.
Well, I'm down here like every day, but he lives down here.
Yeah.
So you're on the street.
Yeah, I live under a bridge.
And have you been camping ticketed?
No, I have not. Actually, cops don't seem to know where I am, which I really like.
Well, we could advise them.
No, we can't.
Well. Very well. Well, thank you for the somewhat vague update.
No problem.
Talking with?
Steve Bunner.
You were previously with?
KMST Channel 46 back in the 80s, before the quake.
And you remember meeting
remember
me
your,
at different...
I remember your activism. Yeah, absolutely. Your hard work, trying to get out here, getting people fed. And you were working hard on the streets, and the city was... battling you, trying to, because they said you had to have a permit in order to feed people, and you are battling them tooth and nail to try to feed people and let the people that live on the streets and give them something good to eat. So
now at that time, John Laird was mayor, and then Marty Wormhout.
Yeah.
Did you have any impressions of those folks?
You know, I live in Oakland now, you know, near Berkeley, and so my recollection of them is from them is a lot different from what I understand they're now. They're very mainstream Democrats now. Back then, they're more, much more, I think Laird was a socialist and Rodkin was his partner in crime back then. Those guys were pretty much close at hand. So
they were sort of socialists who'd like to arrest people for serving free food.
The bone of contention was back then. You were working with your mom, right? Is that who it was?
No,
with?
That was Jane Immler.
Jane Immler.
She was just an activist
exactly.
who was working
okay,
with.
Okay, yeah, I remember Jane too. Yes, absolutely. You guys did a lot of good work. So.
You know this little guy who's with.
This is my son Ryan, and this is my son Brandon.
Brandon,
yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
Ryan.
So you're Michael.
Robert.
Robert. Okay. I'm trying to. My memory's getting this, but I do remember your hard work. So keep it up.
Hey.
And a little self-congratulations here on Free Radio at 101.1 FM. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. We hope nobody is sitting around in stir in New York City from Santa Cruz, but you never can tell. On Sunday, I'll be coming back from 9:30 to 1 o'clock, but between 10 and 12, there's going to be a special show, special presentation, an interview, a phone interview with Robert Whittaker. Now, I don't know if you remember, but Robert Whittaker, for those of you who were here a year ago, is the author of a book called Mad in America. And Mad in America is a book that actually brought along with me into the studio. We had a panel of people talking about the book. I'm going to read you from the back of the book. It's an award-winning medical journalist, Robert Whittaker, revealing an astounding truth that schizophrenics in the United States currently fare worse than patients in the world's poorest countries and quite possibly worse than asylum patients did in the early 19th century. Tracing over three centuries of, quote, cures for madness from the Enlightenment-era practice of spinning the insane, spinning them around, literally, to the brain-damaging lobotomies and electroshock therapy of the 30s, Whittaker shows how medical therapies have been used to silence patients and dull their minds. Perhaps the most damning revelation, however, is Whittaker's report of how drug companies have recently skewed their studies in an effort to prove the effectiveness of their products. A riveting social and medical history, Mad in America raises important questions about our obligations to the mad, what it means to be, quote, insane, and what we value most about the human mind. And Whittaker has actually been researching a new book, which may not see the light of day because it appears that he and his publisher may have decided not to publish it. The book was tentatively titled Anatomy of an Epidemic, and the epidemic that he was talking about is the epidemic of mental illness, which he believes is precipitated by the very medications that are the multi-billion-dollar business that the pharmaceuticals have that they sell to hospitals and doctors nationwide and throughout Western, quote, civilization. It may sound like a very radical idea, but here's a couple of stats for you to think about, and perhaps you can tune in on Sunday if you want to hear this debate. It's not really a debate. It's going to be an interview, but I'm going to try to get a few critics to call in, too, although Whittaker's got a lot of his duckies lined up pretty clearly. I don't know if we can actually get strong and intelligent critics, but if you're a proponent of psychiatric medication, of which there aren't too many that I know, but I guess there are a few, definitely you want to tune in. We're also going to have Berkeley psychiatric rights advocate Sally Zinman call in. George Cavallo, the local psychiatric advocate, has been invited to call in, but haven't heard from him in a few years. He was on the show way back in the 90s. And again, we're looking at the issue of psychiatric medication. And what does it actually do for patients, and what's the significance of what's been happening with it? Here's some stats that Robert Whittaker emailed me. I looked at the number of people receiving disability payments due to mental illness in the U.S., thus either receiving an SSI or an SSDI payment since 1987, which was the year that the first of the new generation of psychiatric drugs was introduced. And what you find is that the number of people so disabled has nearly doubled since then. In fact, I don't think that there has been a society that has dubbed such a high percentage of its population mentally ill, and the disability numbers show that we have a system that leads to ever more people unable to work because of psychiatric distress. Here's the data. SSDI payments. In 1987, 875,000 people received SSDI payments because of mental illness. By 2002, that number had grown from 875,000 to 1.7 million who got SSDI because of mental illness, an increase of 825,000 people over 15 years, or about 55,000 people per year. SSI payments. In 1987, 2.63 million people received SSI payments because of a mental disorder. In 2002, 4.07 million received SSI because they had a diagnosable mental disorder. Thus, the number of people with a mental disorder receiving SSI grew 1.34 million people over this 15-year period, or about 90,000 people per year. And that's a particularly important stat because SSI has become harder, not easier, to get. Total disability. The number of people receiving SSI or SSDI payments in 1987 because of mental disorders was 3.505 million. The number receiving SSI or SSDI payments in 2002 was 5.77 million. That's an increase of 2.165 million people in the past 15 years, or about 145,000 people per year. Those are stats from Robert Whitaker's recent research after his Mad in America book. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey there. This is Michelle. How are you doing?
Hey, Michelle.
I wanted to add just a little clarification. I don't know. Perhaps you explained it, and I missed it. But many people receive both SSI and SSDI because the supplemental goes on top of the standard Social Security because it's kind of based on the how much it's supposed to cost to live in an area, and then supposedly they give you enough to live there. You know, so it's not that you have the number of people who receive one and the number of people who receive the other. There are some people who only receive one, and then there are some people who receive both.
That's a good stat. I think it's important, but I think that it doesn't change the
fact. It doesn't change the fact that it's increased so much.
Right.
And we've gone over into this idea that everything has to be everybody has to be given a name for what is wrong with them, even if what is wrong with them is not would not have been considered a clinical condition 50 years ago or even 25 years ago.
Right, you are.
And all of that, of course, is an aid of the pharmaceutical companies, because once you give someone a diagnosis, you can, if it's a psychiatric disability, you can force feed them medication. And so it's...
Regarding your SSI and SSDI clarification, he was saying that they receive one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is, if you receive both, that wouldn't really alter his stats. So
well, it wouldn't receive his stats unless, it wouldn't change his stats unless people were to assume that the two numbers were added together gave the number of people who received disability for a mental illness of one sort or another.
Yeah, that's an important clarification. We're also going to be having in the studio with us, Michelle, Jane Kaiser of Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective.
Oh, cool.
Who will be, quizzing Robert Whitaker and, who knows, maybe addressing any institutional mental health advocates who may be calling in. She has a very strong position, as you probably know.
I'm not familiar, but I would like to become familiar. Speaking of which, will it be archived? Because I can't listen on Sunday at the time that you broadcast.
Yeah, actually, good point. I'm glad you brought that up. We do archive these shows at www.santacruzcopwatch.org /Robert. So,
okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
Hey,
thanks for bringing this up, and I look forward to listening to it.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
And again, looking at more of what we're going to be talking about with Robert Whitaker, author of Mad in America, in his note that he sent me emailed about 3 or 4 days ago. Now, I also tried, Whitaker writes, to find some data on the increase in mental illness since the psychiatric drugs were introduced in the 1950s. Once again, the data is there of a worsening of mental health. Since 1955, the total number of patient care episodes for severe mental disorders on a per capita basis has quadrupled. This is one metric the government uses to reassure, to measure mental distress in the nation. Similarly, per capita outpatient admissions to mental health programs, a statistic used to measure milder disorders, have increased 250% since 1969. Now, I also looked at spending on psychiatric drugs since 1987, the year Prozac was introduced. That year, we spent about $1 billion on psychiatric drugs. Now, I'm going to give a special prize to anyone who calls in the next 3 minutes and tells me how much that amount has increased to in 2004. It's $1 billion on psychiatric drugs in 1987. How much was it, let's say, by 2002? And actually, 2004, he's extrapolating that far. So actually, we'll make it a little quicker than 3 minutes. We'll make it 1 minute. If anybody cares to call in, 427-3772, you'll get a special, what are we going to do? We'll give you a printout of some of Robert Whitaker's recent stats on this stuff. You have 45 seconds to call in and get your prize. If you can get within an order of magnitude of it was $1 billion in 87 that was spent on psychiatric drugs when Prozac was introduced. How much is it now, this year? Has it gone up? Has it gone down? And by how much? You got 15 seconds left, all you eager callers. So hop on the phones, 427-3772. Do a quick guess. You may be the proud recipient of a special bit of information yourself, which we will pass on to you. Okay. No callers. Here's the stat, at least, that Robert Whitaker uses. The year 1987, we spent about $1 billion on psychiatric drugs. By 2002, this number had increased to $23 billion, and it will be over $25 billion in 2004. That is more than the gross national product of two-thirds of the world's countries. We spend about $13 billion on antidepressants today, which is roughly equal to the gross national product of mid-sized countries like Cameroon and Jordan. And we have a caller. Perhaps you needed to take some Prozac when you heard that figure. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. How you doing?
Good.
You know, I was listening to what you're talking about, like the pharmaceutical drugs and stuff. And, you know, I mean, it's, you know, like this in the Army, smoke them if you got them.
Say
you
that
know,
again?
Smoke them if you got them. Take them if you got them and, like, you know, just turn off of what's going on.
Right. Well, actually, I'd heard, at least in the 60s, people were doing marijuana and heroin rather than, you know, stelazine and thorazine are really kind of very uncomfortable. And I don't know about the newer ones, you know. But
well, you know, I wanted Seroquel to say also, you know, we need to send lots of saludos out to New York because New York is really showing up and getting down, and lots of people out there are doing stuff. You know, and it makes me look back at the West Coast, and I feel shame.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think, Robert? I mean, you know, come on. I mean, there's no rally out here. There's nothing out here for, you know, what's going on to our country, our environment, and our planet.
Well, I got to tell you, it ticks me off. I mean, that's why I went out on the street on Saturday and Sunday for 4 hours with this Vigil Against Two Wars stuff. We set up a table in front of the Pacific Trading Company, and we're talking about the war on the poor and the war in Iraq. And we did get about 10 or 20 people to call into FAR and filled up his phone lines here. And we, you know, we did made a few stump speeches, but it's true. I don't know how many people are going to show up next Sunday, 11 o'clock, in the middle of this whole business on psychiatric drugs and Robert Whitaker and so forth, but there's going to be a protest, as I mentioned before, earlier in this program, in front of the recruiting center on 41st Avenue out in Capitola, so you might want to check that out.
You know, Robert, I always like to talk to people, you know, and straight up ask them, you know, excuse me, you know, are you dealing with one of those therapist people who give you things to take? Because, you know, I mean, there's so many people, and, you know, it never ceases to amaze me how many people in our neighborhood are under the influence of these people who are pushing medications on them and telling them all kinds of strange bullshit. I mean, I hear them telling them, like, well, my therapist told me that I should stop sleeping with men until I'm 25, or, you know, some weird shit like that. It's like, you know, excuse me, who's your therapist?
Well, that is Whitaker's contention
And he's apparently amassed a significant amount of data on it to show that there has been a huge increase in not only in the psychiatric medication, not only in, you know, diagnoses that may be influenced by pharmaceutical companies funding these studies, but even more significant, this is really the horrifying claim or fact. It's hard to tell. I mean, it, you know, I have not gone back to the original data. I can't tell you. But what Whitaker claims is that the use of these psychiatric medications has made psychosis, what they call psychosis, breakdowns more frequent, significantly more frequent. And he does this by comparing World Health Organization figures here with in third world countries with where they don't use the psychiatric medications and how long it takes people to recover, how many people get, quote, mentally ill, in three different, widely different cultures in third world countries. And he finds significantly higher rates of illness and longer rates of illness here in the United States and in Western Europe. And these are, he believes, correlated. They've also found this more directly, not just kind of vaguely, but directly in pilot tests with the use of these medications. And it's just...
Well, right, you know, check it out. I mean, between the chemtrails, the medications, the fluoride in the water, and all that poison that they're going to give you when you, like, you know, conjugate in, like, one place where you try and, like, make some sort of social change, you know, Santa Cruz, you know, and it's a falsehood, but, I mean, you know, I mean, that's what happens. And I look around and, you know, I look in New York and I think, well, maybe people will finally, like, realize that, you know, maybe it's time to, like, step out. But, you know, I'm still not really seeing much happening here except for people buying, you know, fad clothing at Urban, whatever it is.
Well, remember, in New York City, it's people coming to a particular event, the Republican National Convention, and protesting there. And they're, you know, although the mainstream Democrats may be saying, oh, we don't want anything to do with the protesters, there are plenty of people who are all hot to vote for Kerry who are out there on the streets protesting Bush. Not that that isn't a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. I don't care what you do in November. It's what you do tomorrow that really counts.
No, absolutely. I am all in favor for anybody who wants to go out there and say that the status quo is not happening and we need to change it.
Right, but what I'm saying is that these aren't people mostly from the New York neighborhoods, as far as I know. I mean, you know, in the 60s, maybe even in the 70s, you had people rising up in their own neighborhoods and demanding community controls, sometimes nonviolently, sometimes violently. I don't know. I don't think that this is that kind of deal. I think that these are people who have come to town for the specific objective, which is to...
But do you really think so, Robert? I mean, think about the numbers that they've been reporting and think about where these people are staying. I think a lot of these people are people that are caught up in the moment and that are falling out onto the streets from their New York high-rises and saying, like, you know, I mean, look at New York. I mean, that's where the whole 9/11 thing started. You know, and then to now and Bush going into, you know, the next 4 years, you know, what do we have? I think a lot of the New Yorkers have really thought about it and realized that, you know, more war is not the answer. And I think there's, you know, way more New Yorkers than there are people who have actually flooded into the town for the convention, even though, you know, I have to, you know, applaud all of the people. I mean, think about all the people from Santa Cruz that are there. That's really cool.
Well, you could be right, you know, caller. That's actually one thing I have not seen any stats on. Have you seen any reports from reporters on what, you know, what the percentage of New Yorkers are in these crowds?
Well, I mean, you know, I hear different things on, you know, mostly radio because I don't watch the television. But, you know, I mean, they go back and forth with it, and it could be anywhere from, you know, 100,000 to 300,000.
No, I don't mean the numbers. I mean the content of the crowds. Are they New Yorkers or are they out-of-towners?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. But nevertheless, it's people out there, and I'm thinking, you know, I mean, you know, I've been to New York, and if you bring, you know, 300,000 people into New York, where are they going to sleep? Where are they going to stay? You know, if that many people, you know, materialize on the street, then, you know, for me, being in New York, I go, you know, that's what happens when New York falls out for a party, for, you know, a big party. And I think that New York and lots of people that have moved or, you know, that are going there are saying no to the present regime.
Well, you could well be right. I'll ask the V-Man and Crone and others who are coming back from New York what they saw, and I'll kind of keep my eye peeled in the paper. Appreciate your call, caller.
Well, right on. And how cool is it that the V-Man and Chrome and everybody's over there doing what they're doing, you know, and that Santa Cruz is in the house in New York. And, you know, and I'm looking at Santa Cruz and talking to my neighbors, and I'm saying, you know, you need to call people out on the street and say, like, you know, have you really thought about what's going on? And, you know, do you think anything is going to change in the next 4 months, 6 months, 8 months? You know, I think it's all over, Robert, the American way that I grew up under. And, I met your brother, and, I mean, the way we grew up, it's history. And either we come together and create a new, culture, or we lose everything. And I think we'll see it happen in Santa Cruz. So thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you.
Talk to you later.
All right, man. Bye-bye.
And apropos of that, let's take a look at what's happening in Iraq, one of my favorite countries. I actually downloaded some recent stories from Al Jazeera, the Arabic news service in the Middle East that was kicked out of Iraq by the Al-Alawi U.S.-appointed government there, but is still giving updates through its reporters or through its sources there as to what's going on. 10 or 20 people killed by Fallujah bombing by the U.S. I think it's either U.S. Air Forces or I guess it's bombers from the air. Here's a story which you can find on Empire Notes. More escapades from the Alawi government. That's www.empirenotes.org, I believe. Given the importance of framing, and let's see. Check out the latest from the Times. Talks to disarm rebel Shiites collapses in Iraq. Leaving aside the questions of grammar, note that the headline ascribes the collapse of the talks to no specific agent. To anyone who has read an American newspaper, this is a clear red flag that the side favored by the U.S. government, the Alawi government, is responsible for the collapse, just the way Palestinians are killed by mysterious forces known as clashes or crossfires when things get really hairy. Sometimes they're killed by security operations or even incursions. But Israelis are always killed by clearly defined human agents. And I'd read more of this article, but first I have to take your call. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Robert. Good show, but Valerie and I have a complaint.
Go for it.
Your mic is always too low and everybody else is much louder.
Hey, but the voice of the people.
Yeah, but what about you?
Okay.
We want to hear your crap.
How do I sound now?
Fine.
Okay.
All right, so good show.
Hey.
All right, bye.
All righty. And in fact, if you have a report yourself and you happen to be downtown by chance listening to this radio, I understand that there is a cellular phone near the Huff Cop Watch table in front of Borders. So just belly your way up to the table and say, I want to make a report. I've got an opinion. I want to make a call to the station. And I believe you'll find a sympathetic telephone service there at least for the next 10 minutes while we wait for this show to run its course. So here's this article in the New York Times. Talks to disarm rebel Shiites collapses in Iraq. Baghdad. Talks to disarm hundreds of insurgents in the roiling Sadr City ghetto in Baghdad collapsed Tuesday after a tentative peace pact was abruptly canceled by Prime Minister Ayad Alawi. Leaders of the Mahdi army, the rebel force led by the Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, and two well-placed Iraqi sources said an agreement had been reached late Monday that called for the disarming of the rebel force and a halt in American military operations in Sadr City. Mahdi army commanders and other Iraqi sources said Tuesday that Dr. Alawi backed out of the agreement on Tuesday morning. He's the head of the government. The failure of negotiations raised the prospect of more violence from Mr. Sadr's Shiite insurgency, meaning the Iraqi government may not be able to direct its full political and military resources to quelling the continuing Sunni insurgency in other parts of the country. Also on Tuesday, a militant Islamic group announced a mass killing in Iraq, showing pictures of 12 dead Nepalese laborers for a Jordanian company. The agreement on Monday on Sadr City reached after several days of negotiations had come on the heels of the withdrawal of Mr. Sadr's forces from Najaf last week. After the intervention of Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, the country's most powerful religious leader. Last night there was a deal, said Youssef al-Nasiri, the leader of the Mahdi army in Sadr City. This morning there was supposed to be a press conference, but then Alawi surprised us and he has taken us back to zero. Simultaneous news conferences scheduled by Dr. Alawi and the Mahdi army to announce their earlier deal were called off. Mr. Nazari said he had been told by one of the government negotiators, Qasim Daoud, the Minister of State, that Dr. Alawi had objected to the restrictions placed on American soldiers operating in the area. Now get this. under the agreement that the Alawi government decided to dump, the Americans would be limited to performing reconstruction work. Anything more aggressive than that would require the permission of the Iraqi government. So, in essence, American troops could still go in and bomb the hell out of people, shoot them dead, smash down their doors, but it would require the permission of the Iraqi government. Alawi apparently didn't like that. Dr. Alawi could not be reached for comment. An American diplomat speaking on condition of anonymity said American officials were unaware of such an agreement between the Iraqi government and Mr. Sadr. The diplomat said the Americans would likely have been informed of such a deal because the role of American soldiers would be central to any agreement on Sadr City. But an Iraqi source said Dr. Alawi had decided to take a harsher approach toward Mr. Sadr and the Mahdi army, possibly including the use of military force. The source said Dr. Alawi appeared to be motivated by disappointment with the agreement in Najaf, which ended the bloodshed there but left the Mahdi army intact and made Mr. Sadr stronger than ever in the eyes of many Iraqis. In addition, the Iraqi source said Dr. Alawi had recently come under intense pressure from Shiite political parties that fear that the entry of Mr. Sadr into the political mainstream could diminish their own potential success at the polls. Those groups would prefer that Mr. Sadr be eliminated, the Iraqi source said. The groups include the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, which was long based in Iran, and which has close ties to Ayatollah Sistani, and Dawah, a prominent religious movement. Such established organizations tend to see Mr. Sadr as an upstart. The Iraqi source said it was possible that Mr. Dr. Alawi's intention was to kill or capture Mr. Sadr in hopes of striking a death blow to his increasingly popular movement, which has the support of many poor Shiites and of 150 imams around the country. He wants to humiliate Muqtada, the source said of Dr. Alawi. He needs a victory. We have a phone call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. I didn't mean to interrupt your newscast there.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay. Hi. Anyway.
Hi.
I've just been listening to some of the other people who've called in and that you've interviewed today,
mm-hmm.
and talking about the issues that you were just talking about, actually, about the Social Security thing. What is it, SSI and SS whatever?
We're talking, actually, I was talking about the interview coming up with Robert Whitaker on Sunday about pharmaceutical drugs being causing a plague in this country. That was his claim. He's not really talking about the increase in SSI or SSDR, the decrease. He's talking about the increase in the number of people that have been seeking it for mental illnesses and actually been getting it.
Right, right. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking
about. Oh, okay.
About.
Sorry.
And, well, I just want to comment as an ex-police officer.
Uh-huh.
I joined the police department right after high school when
uh-huh.
you actually could still be under 21 to carry a gun.
Uh-huh.
And I was pretty much, my father used to say that the police are just like the criminals. They just got on the other side of the fence and passed their training. Which I began to actually understand my father, who, you know, was basically a hippie. But my father worked. I mean, being a hippie, he made money, you know, working and all that. I mean, he never was, quote, a straight person.
Mm-hmm.
But he did support our family. He didn't sit on the street asking for money.
Right.
So I have a different view of some of the people. I grew up, I was born in the, the Summer of Love.
Uh-huh.
So I'm one of the, you know, first spring baby hippie kids from the Bay Area.
Which police force were you part of?
It's a little department in right outside of Richmond,
uh-huh.
which I really don't want to state. Because,
no, that's fine.
Very honestly, I know some things that, you know, I really don't want to talk about publicly.
Okay.
You know, when you work on the inside of things like that, you know that there's a database going on and they know where to find you.
And the Richmond Department is pretty notorious, at least it was for the last 20 years or so. But go ahead.
Well, that whole area, every department in that area.
Are you a Santa Cruzan now? Or?
Well, I am, yeah.
And you haven't decided to join the SCPD?
Well, I actually joined the military. And,
uh-huh.
To get out of the police department.
Which branch were you in?
Well, I was in the Army National Guard. I thought I'd get my feet wet to see what it was all about.
Maybe you'll just get your feet sandy, huh?
Yeah. But that was probably a few years before the Gulf War, and I got my papers the month that the Gulf War started. And I had already, by that time, realized that that was not better than the police department. So then I went to college on my GI Bill,
mm-hmm.
and I graduated with honors.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say, you know, being in Santa Cruz, I'm one of the few people here who doesn't do drugs. I mean, all around myself, you know, I've seen people on Social Security, and if anybody should have went crazy, I should have with the stuff that I saw on the inside.
You don't take Prozac or?
I have never taken Prozac. I don't take sleeping pills. I don't smoke pot. I don't do anything but coffee and tea.
Now, what about alcohol? Are you not a big drinker?
Well, I figured out that alcohol wasn't really good for my complexion,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But I bet you eat chocolate.
I do eat chocolate. That's good for my complexion. But
all
I don't
right.
consider that a drug. It's a food of the gods. But,
well, sex is better than alcohol. I mean, than chocolate. Or perhaps not. It's hard to tell, actually.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm trying to give you some of my understanding of being both, you know, born in the whole hippie revolution and, you know, being really very part of going to Haight-Ashbury as a child, being in Berkeley, you know, being with people, like, you know, things that my parents did were taking hippie vans, you know, like, and like, what do you call them, like, whole groups of vans where we just really just drive. I don't even know where we went.
Now, do you have nostalgia for those days, or are you critical of those days? Or?
Well, you know, there's some good things about those days, but as a kid, I also saw people jumping off roofs, naked, breaking their legs. I mean, I saw a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a lot of people go crazy. I know people that have tried to commit suicide for 20 or 30 years, and they still haven't made it.
what did you hear specifically tonight? Because I only got about 4 minutes left.
Okay.
Which you think, you know, caught your attention.
Right. Well, what gets my attention in Santa Cruz is we have this real big opportunity to really open up in this community, unlike other communities. Like the Bay Area that I'm from, you know, if you're the wrong color, you could get killed. You could walk across the street. You don't get a ticket for jaywalking. Somebody will just hit you with their car. I mean, those are some pretty rough neighborhoods I grew up in. And here is nothing anywhere close to that kind of war. Although it's kind of getting there in some little areas, but it's not like that, not like how I actually grew up. But where I'm critical about Santa Cruzans is they want to get on one side of the fence and be victims and be very vocal about every type of victimhood, but not look at their own shit. Like some of the guys you talked to on the street today that are sitting around asking for money. There is a problem in this country. But the solution isn't to sit around calling people fuckheads and shit and this, you know, just basically debasing the fact that they don't want to do anything or even use their brain.
Well, remember that the people who were using the fuck every second word were the military guys who had gotten back from Iraq.
And
I mean, I don't know what they were forced to do over there. I mean, did you serve actively? Did you ever kill anybody when you were?
No, I didn't, because I got my papers to get out at the time that the Gulf War was just starting out, and they were just beginning to have volunteers go. So, no, but I do know a lot of people who came back pretty messed up, and I do understand the language. I mean, we know, you know, as far as four-letter words, I understand that. That's really not the issue.
Mm-hmm.
I understood the guys, you know, in Watsonville were angry, but the ones in Santa Cruz that didn't go there, the ones that don't go anywhere, that sit on their butt talking about everybody, like whoever that cop is.
Pam Bechtel, yeah.
Oh, Pam Bechtel. Now, I know there's issues, and I know people who've had issues with different cops. And, in fact, I went on the witness stand for somebody to save their butt because I am an ex-cop and I have a clean record.
Uh-huh.
But I won't go on a witness stand when somebody creates something themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think here, you have people, you know, basically victimizing the whole entire system when they don't realize that we're creating all of this. I mean, we are all, yes, we don't all own the prison system. There is something majorly wrong with arresting people for smoking pot. I mean, being that it's not a patented drug.
Well, let me, because I only got about a minute to respond to you, Michelle, and I invite you to call back on Sunday, by the way, because then we'll have more time to talk. But, you know, my concern is that you're making a more general critique of, you know, people, you know, bums hanging out on the streets, not getting anywhere, just, you know, flapping their gums and so forth. There are all kinds of bums in all kinds of positions. We're all maybe to some extent bums ourselves one time or another in different circumstances. I mean, we're more active and less active. I'm concerned about the rights of people to use public spaces without harassment, and that's why I interviewed these folks, and that's what I was trying to get out of those interviews. In other words, I was looking for, you know, reasonable health and public safety concerns. I would have no problem with Pam Bechtel's dealing with and addressing those. But sitting on a planter is not a reasonable concern. There is a notion that somehow some people shouldn't be around and that police use these laws to get rid of them. Unfortunately, I can't really talk to you more about this. You're invited to call back, and I thank you for calling in, Michelle. I'll give you the last word. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, it's not just a critique about people sitting around. What I'm saying is there are a lot of people in Santa Cruz who are part of the problem, and then there are a lot of people trying to solve, like trying to solve the problem. You're getting out there. You're trying to create a solution. I hear that.
And so are you, but I got to cut off your solution because there's a man coming in who's coming in, and I got to let him come in. So give me a call back on Sunday. We'll pick this up.
Okay.
Hey, thank you, Michelle.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. And that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. You want to pick up this show in case you haven't been able to hear it. It's archived at www.santacruzcopwatch.org/Robert. Call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, if you want more information. It's a bit old, that message, but still, you know, it ages well. And you can also go to the Huff website, www.huffsantacruz.org. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We're going to sort of fade out on the music of Tom Donovan. And here he is. Tune in again on Sunday at 9:30, and I'll talk to you then.